The Thursday that maybe feels a bit like a Wednesday, this January 4th already, as we say good morning to our friend Jason Cairns. Best 5 minutes of the day. Hi.
Good morning.
I was saying earlier, I don't know, it was just tough to wake up. It was one of those days where, I don't know, the dog or somebody, I woke up around short of my alarm going off, and it was just like, it's so toasty in bed, you just don't want to get up. And I'm like, ah, man, it felt like a Wednesday, yeah. But it's Thursday already, so that's good.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of thoughts. I have that where, you know, I'll wake up 20 minutes before my alarm goes off, and I think, oh, my goodness, why, yeah. You know, why now?
Right.
You know, if it's 2 hours, you can get back to sleep, but uh-huh. 20 minutes, it doesn't give you time. And then I totally agree with feeling like Wednesday. You know, it's been confusing all week knowing yeah. what day it is and where we're supposed to be and all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, my wife going to bed last night, she's like, what? You know, it's so hard to know what day it is. And she works out of right. the home a lot, you know, so it makes it a little confusing, too. So.
Sure, yep.
Well, we heard from a listening friend yesterday, and I don't want to share that listener's name, but I shared some of the exchange with you because it yeah. was encouraging. And so we had talked yesterday just about the confusion of life and in so many ways, and somebody responded after yesterday's best five and says, I'm glad I'm not the only one asking God what this world's all about. And I'm like, oh, listen, friend, I'm right there with you. Yep. I think I need to reread Larry Crabb's When God's Ways Don't Make Sense. And the listener was like, Mark, you teach us what it's all really about. It's about loving God and loving one another. So that was really encouraging.
Definitely encouraging. And, you know, that's a message I think we both really want to mm-hmm. get across is the idea of loving well. You know, I think so much of what we read about in the Bible comes down to love, love for God, love for others. I think that listener is exactly right. And I hope we do that well, and I hope I practice that well.
I actually started a message to you on Facebook, but got busy and didn't finish. But thanking you for championing that with being the Ludio guy, love up, down, yeah. in, out. You made the word, you know, so there you go.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those things, and maybe this is true of a lot of things we believe, but putting them into practice can often yeah. be more challenging, right? And so we have to be intentional, I think, about putting those things like loving well uh-huh. into practice.
I want to talk about that more in a second, but this is the rest of the conversation that I didn't share with you yesterday. I finished it off, and I said, praise God, I'm glad that that's what's coming through, especially between you and I here. But he says, that really is what I think it's all about. My life verse these days is Galatians 5:6. The only thing that counts is faith expressing itself through love, to which the listener said, I love that verse, Mark. Thank you so much for that. So,
yeah.
But
yeah, I've heard you say that one a number of times.
Yeah, if I don't have any tattoos, but I'll tell you what, that yeah. one, you know, maybe. But it's tattooed on my heart and my soul. And,
right.
But yes, totally with you on living it, because I think yeah. of our friend Larry Crabb, there it is again, but Inside Out, that the concept that was introduced to me there, that idea of self-protection, that, you know, and I think that's where the love and fear of 1 John 4, I'm continually, I think, being led by the Holy Spirit to deal with that. I think all of us, Jason, I mean, let's just be honest. All of us have so much fear that we need to clean out of our basement so that we can love better, don't you think?
Yeah, I think and it begins with at least owning it, naming that.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, kind of sitting with that and then agreeing or deciding to love anyway. And yeah. For me, again, it's often challenging, and I want to do well with that.
Right. And so just to reiterate what you're saying, you know, because it starts with championing love, talking about being intentional. Thank you that to the listener here saying that it's coming through love God, love one another. We would both agree it starts with embracing God's, you know, unconditional love, obviously.
For sure.
But
yep.
but then living that out is going to be a lifelong journey in terms of dealing with you're planning to hopefully lead a Sunday morning group at church starting on Dan White's book, Love Over Fear. And so, you know, there we go.
Yep. A great book for folks if they mm-hmm. are looking for some reading in the new year.
My wife ordered me his book, Subterranean. It's kind of the story of his life in ministry. It just came yesterday.
Yep.
So that.
Yeah. I've not read that one yet.
See, it's a rare book that I might have that I might be able to pass on to you. How about that?
Yep.
All right.
Wonderful.
We've got the rest of 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 8 through 12. We read a little bit of your devotional commentary take. Let's finish that today.
Sure.
The rest of it goes like this. You'd read the verses yesterday. I've been telling this salvation story since the beginning of time, thousands of years before you were born. I used Old Testament storytellers to write the earliest chapters. They asked me questions, paid attention, listened, and then told the people about how my son would come into the world as a suffering servant I would glorify. Just as you have joy in my son, whom you have not seen, so did they. They praised me and served you by telling my story. You have now heard more of this good story through those like Peter, who saw my son and heard from my spirit. Finally, do not take this gift for granted. Even my angels wish they could fully understand the greatness and glory of what I'm doing in you.
You know, I had mentioned my word of the year is present, right? And one of the things I want to stay present to is, what is God doing in the world? What is the story God is telling? And I am grateful that there were those who took that charge seriously.
Absolutely. So, and again, your devotional commentary, it's available. People want to order it. Christmas may be over, but go to Amazon, Letters to the Beloved. And it's this idea of kind of, you've imagined God kind of walking you through the scriptures and saying, all right, this is what I want you to see here. So.
You bet. All right.
Well, if you have pets in your home, and probably more on the dog side than the cat side, they have more than likely consumed something at some point where you would say, why? Did you eat that? And if things really escalate, you may have to go have it removed. And we have a list of things that have been found in the stomachs of pets.
Indeed, we do. A survey of veterinarians revealed that there are some of these things removed from the stomachs of pets, including a tent steak. Wow.
Yikes. Why would you eat that, Fido? Yeah. How about a star-shaped Christmas decoration?
Huh.
Looked good, I guess.
One animal, presumably, they found a kitchen knife.
Good thing that the dog is okay. Mm. Man, alphabet fridge magnets, that makes more sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah, those look tasty.
You can understand that, right? Just kind of fell off the fridge. They found a wig in one dog's stomach.
Another dog ate some undergarments as well, too. Not sure that you'd want those back.
How about a bell?
How about a fishing hook?
Where are your socks? Maybe your dog's stomach. They found
That's
some socks.
Where they go.
No.
But they only eat one of them. One of them from each pair. And finally, a rubber duck. Weird stuff removed from pets, and we're just assuming that it's dogs' stomachs. A rubber duck. So what did your dog eat? Whether you had to have it removed, hopefully not, or found it later. What did your dog eat? We're curious. 715-396-1670. The classic one is homework, right? But what's something your dog actually ate? We'd love to know.
396-1670. WWIB. We have some troubles. Like, one of our dogs, like, wants to go into the compost pile. Like, stay out of there, you know?
Yeah. So, not for you.
All right, let's hear from you. 396-1670. What strange or unusual thing did your dog consume?
Well, I was born in the 80s, an 80s baby, late 80s baby. You were born a little bit earlier, but we have some phrases that we've probably both been familiar with hearing in our households growing up, or used before as well. Phrases that were common in the 80s and 90s, and I really feel like, oh, yeah, that was just a decade ago, but in fact, it was not.
I want to just note how kind you were to me there. You said I was born a little earlier.
A little.
Instead of saying, how about you were born in the mid-60s, you were born at the tail end of the baby boomers. Thank you, though. Thank you.
Phrases that were common in the 1980s and 90s. Mm-hmm. People born in the 2000s may not understand these, but a lot of us, we do. For instance, night and weekend minutes. Nights and weekend minutes, when a lot of us were getting our first cell phones, that was a thing.
That's
kids,
right.
Kids, they restricted how many minutes, but it was unlimited after 6 or after 7 p.m., sometimes after 8 p.m. I remember commercials where everyone was screaming like they were young ladies at a boy band concert, but what they were screaming was, 7, 7, because you then could get unlimited minutes, like T-Mobile or somebody gave you unlimited minutes after 7 p.m. And it was super exciting because you could talk to your friends ad nauseum.
How exciting those night and weekend minutes were. Exactly. How about this one that kids of today could not relate to? Don't stretch the phone cord.
Yeah, don't what?
We had a landline back in the day, and I know in our house for many years, probably only in the last few years, did we drop one. But even then, the cord was dropped because you usually had a wireless, right?
Yeah, I mean, and again, and another phrase you could throw in there, cordless phone.
Mm-hmm.
And kids would wonder, what?
Yeah.
But yes, there used to be corded and cordless phones. How about this one? Phrases that were common in the 80s and 90s. I remember this. I'm online. Don't pick up the phone. Parents will just let you explain that.
Well, and then when you had multiple landlines, I know in the house I grew up, you had an upstairs phone, a downstairs. You don't want your parents picking up, whatever. So
my old Juno email account, getting in touch with my camp friends. It would take 5 minutes just to get my emails.
I'm thinking about phones, right? Old enough because I'm a little older. The rotary phones, do you remember that at all?
Not from using them personally, but of course I know what they are. Yeah, absolutely.
Here's another phrase from days gone by. Be kind, rewind.
They would have stickers on those as well, too. Also, I can throw out things like Blockbuster or in my hometown, Video Plus. Yes. Again, parents, you'll have fun walking down Nostalgia Lane and trying to explain to your kids about that. Phrases that were common in the 80s and 90s here on the Wib Wake Up Show. A similar one, get off the internet. I need to use the phone.
Yeah, there you go.
Yes, you couldn't use both at the same time when you had those dial-up modems.
And back in the day, information. What city and state, please?
That one I'm not familiar with.
I think like calling, I think it's...
You dial a certain number. Yeah,
dialing. And sometimes you do that too. So there you go. From days gone by, language that had been used. Helbo and Caleb, the Wib Wake Up Show here with you on a Thursday morning. It's January 4th. May feel a bit like a Wednesday, but it is a Thursday.
Well, today we've been talking about some phrases that were common in the 80s and 90s. Let's take a trip down memory lane once again and talk about some outdated technology that we just can't give up. And maybe that's because sometimes this outdated tech is actually better than what we have now.
Yeah, for instance, physical books. I have a hard time giving those up, Caleb.
I mean, I would say, too, again, there's just something feels better about reading an actual book than just trying to scroll on a screen.
What are some other ones?
How about physical maps? I don't use this as much, but great for a broad overview of countries and regions. And again, for a visual reference, if I'm in the car, I don't really want the gazetteer. I want my GPS. However, if you're actually trying to show someone where something is on a map, I also don't want to do the little pinchy thing on my phone. I want to be able to show them on an actual map. So sure.
And globes are still cool.
Yeah, they are. You can spin them.
There you go. Things we have trouble giving up, like paper tickets, collectible and nostalgic, often considered more reliable than e-tickets.
Yes. Again, if I'm going to spend the money to go to a Packers game, I would really like to have an actual physical ticket, not just a screenshot on my phone. How about VHS and DVD? Because we feel like we don't own those streaming movies where it's like, oh, you purchased this on Amazon Prime. Well, I like having something to clutter up the shelf with a DVD or VHS case.
We had a lot of people glad to win the digital download movie we sent to them. We sent a number of those, but still, nonetheless, something to be said for that. How about physical menus in restaurants?
Absolutely agree.
More convenient, user-friendly than the QR code menu.
I do not want to. If I go in a restaurant, I do not want to have to scan a QR code. And maybe that just makes me old at 36. I want an actual menu that you place in my hands or put on the table. That's what I want.
We get used to it.
Outdated tech we can't give up because maybe it's actually better. Notebooks and pens. The act of writing helps with memory retention. Absolutely agree. I wrote all my notes in college with purple pen on actual paper when a lot of classmates had laptops, but I think it helped me, other than the times I fell asleep.
There you go. Handheld can openers. I'm used to these. Reliable and simple to use compared to the electric ones.
We have a Pampered Chef one at home. Nice. Outdated tech that we can't give up, but maybe it's better. Analog watches, classic and functional, providing a quick and easy time check. You don't have to pull your phone out of your pocket. Just look at your wrist, sure.
And finally, Windows XP, loved for its simplicity and reliability, especially in industrial settings.
Now, this is an interesting note. A lot of Windows computers were still running XP in 2023. I'm actually not sure how many because I'm not sure if this is a typo or not. But anyway, there's some computers that still run Windows XP because it was one of the triumphs of Windows.
Yeah. Well, Caleb, I saw this headline and I just couldn't believe it. The Ice Bucket Challenge turns 10 years old.
It is hard to believe that was that long ago. And and it seemed like that kind of began this movement of hashtag this, hashtag that. But it did a lot of good and it's 10 years old.
Yeah, that's right. In the summer of 2014, now where were you then? The ALS Ice Bucket Challenge took the internet by storm, becoming the largest social media movement in medical history.
The challenge involved, of course, participants being filmed as they had a bucket of ice water poured over their heads before nominating others to do the same thing.
Yeah, the viral sensation was not just a fun activity. It had a significant purpose. It was aimed at raising awareness and funds for ALS. You know it as Lou Gehrig's disease, a disease that degrades nerve cells in the brain and spinal cord over time, leading to loss of muscle control and ultimately death.
So sometimes, again, with social media hashtag things, we wonder, is it just keyboard activism? Does anything actually come of it? Well, the ALS challenge was a resounding success. It involved 17 million people and raised an estimated $220 million around the globe.
Yeah. The funds raised had a profound impact on ALS research. They helped scientists identify 12 genes that play a critical role in ALS, opening the door to potential treatments.
The funds also allowed the ALS Association to increase its research budget and initiate new clinical trials. So again, a lot of times we tend to be hard on social media and the negative effects, which are certainly documented and proven. But it's part of the reason why we do the hashtag best thing I saw this week in our Wib Wake Up Show group on Friday mornings. Let's focus on the positive side of things and say, hey, this can be a great tool for good. And the ALS challenge a decade ago is proof of that.
Real quick, I just have to share. This is one of my favorite stories. And it's the guy that I got to know best who had ALS. Gary used to work for the Tires Plus, which was just north of us here on the service road, Halley Road. And I knew he was a Tampa Bay Bucks fan. And then all of a sudden, one day, I went there for an oil change, and he wasn't there. And they said, Gary said, homie, he has ALS. And I actually paid him a visit, and I knew he was a big Tampa Bay fan. And he was struggling and with ALS, as you do. And I came back here, and Greg, with Sports and Commentary back in the day, and I used the media guide, reached out to Tony Dungy, who, that's not long ago. This is not the Indianapolis Colts. He was with the Buccaneers. And remember, they were in the Packers division. Lo and behold, he calls me the next day and says, I'm getting ready to call Gary. Just wanted to touch base with you. He calls Gary, has a half-hour conversation. Gary, eventually, when he passes, they write up the Tony Dungy call in the obituary. It's mentioned at the funeral. How's that, huh?
Man, and Tony again, Dungy's Tony, a lot of respect for Tony Dungy, and what a wonderful thing to be able to have that memory for Gary as well.
Yeah, absolutely.